This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio Congressman Henry Cuellar, a Democrat, has teamed up with Texas Senator John Cornyn, a Republican, to introduce legislation that would allow the speeding up of deportation of the children who are coming up from Central America to the Texas-Mexico border. Earlier this month, President Obama called for similar changes to the law, but he then backed away after getting some flack. Meanwhile, others are calling for granting of refugee status for these children. What is the future of these undocumented minors, both short-term and long-term, as political priorities shift and outside influences mount? Do you think that the United States has a responsibility to these children? Or maybe we don't, even if they are facing the possibility of death if they're deported back to their home countries. Give us a call. We want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. You could also email us your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org or comment directly on a show page on our website at tpr.org. Our guest this half hour, Mark Rosenblum. He's the Deputy Director of the U.S. Immigration Policy Program at the Migration Policy Institute, and Jonathan Ryan, Executive Director of RAICES, a nonprofit group here in San Antonio that provides legal help to child immigrants and to families. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Thank you.
Mark,
good to be here. Thanks.
Mark, let me ask you, what are these changes that are being proposed by Congressman Cuellar and Senator Cornyn?
So basically, their bill would make changes to a 2008 law, the Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act, and that law establishes special procedures for unaccompanied children from countries other than Mexico or Canada. Under current law, unaccompanied children are placed in removal proceedings, which means they're ordered to appear before an immigration judge. But because of backlogs in the system, those hearings can take place, you know, 2 or 3 years off in the future. And in the meantime, current law requires that they be held in the least restrictive setting in the best interest of the child, which usually means being placed with a family member. So the Cornyn Cuellar proposal would change both parts of that. They would require a hearing within 7 days instead of 2 or 3 years. And they would require that kids be held in custody until their hearing can take place.
Why did so this passed in 2008, signed by President George W. Bush. It was passed unanimously by the Congress and the Senate. Why did it pass so strongly back then, but now not so much?
Well, you know, the law addresses a real problem that still exists, which is that, you know, many kids who arrive at the border are fleeing, you know, genuine, you know, bad humanitarian conditions. And so, you know, the intent of the law is to make sure that those kids get a chance to appear before an immigration judge and to apply for a humanitarian visa. There's a couple of different visas that the United States makes available to children, you know, fleeing bad conditions. So the law passed in 2008 was designed to make sure that they got a fair hearing and an adequate due process to make those claims. And the reason that, you know, it's now seen as problematic is that the immigration court system has gotten so backlogged. You know, it's been sort of underfunded for several years, and so now these waits have gotten very long. And the unanticipated thing that happened in the last few years is that because kids face such long waits, it's become sort of a successful model for unauthorized immigration. So a lot more people are coming here to seek relief and to take advantage of those long wait times.
So it becomes like a de facto long-term stay in the United States. At the very least, you get to be here for a year or so legally.
Right. And then the other thing, of course, that's happened is that the conditions in Central America have really deteriorated in the last several years. And so there's very strong push factors in Honduras and Guatemala and El Salvador that are causing people to flee those countries.
So, Jonathan Ryan, over at RAICES, you're in the courtroom trying to help these children. You're helping these children. The seven-day speed-up. Now you're going to have to see a judge within 7 days. Is that feasible?
It's certainly feasible for the government to organize that. But whether or not the child can fairly present their claim and prepare it in that amount of time it really defies logic to think how these children, fresh off of a traumatic journey, in detention without any adult to assist them, are going to be able to participate in this hearing. They don't speak English. More and more of these children don't even speak Spanish, as they are coming from the mountainous areas of the indigenous parts of Guatemala. So it's unfathomable to see how any kind of due process can be provided to the children in this kind of expedited fashion.
But the law, as I've seen it reported on in the Washington Post and New York Times, is that they want to treat these children coming up from Central America the same way that we would treat the children from Canada and Mexico, meaning to almost automatically deport them. Is that the plan?
Well, one distinction I might draw is that Canada and Mexico are not the first or fourth or fifth nations on the list with the most murders on earth. These countries are devastated now by violence, crime, poverty. It is not the same situation. There are reasons that Mexico and Canada have these special abilities. They are more developed nations. They have services, social service agencies that are equipped to receive these children. We have no idea into whose hands these children will be returned. There is no safety net in Central America. These children will effectively be dropped off in the middle of one of the most dangerous cities on earth, directly into the hands of the traffickers that they were fleeing from. So to see how any kind of safe repatriation can be performed really is beyond me. And I think that as a nation, when we have these children in our custody, we have a responsibility to handle them and to treat them fairly and safely. I do not know how that can be done under this proposal.
So, Mark Rosenblum, in Washington, D.C., as you see things at the U.S. Immigration Policy Program at the Migration Policy Institute, is this law going to pass quickly? I know that Cornyn and Quay are calling for it to they want it done by the end of the month.
Well, there's at least three different congressional proposals that have already been introduced, and there's a fourth one likely coming. So this is one of four ideas out there for, you know, all of which share the idea of coming up with a more expedited hearing process and keeping people in custody until they can have a hearing. You know, the reason we may see something like this, the House Republicans have announced that they're going to attach some kind of conditions, some probably changes to TVPRA, as a condition for providing the emergency supplemental funding that the White House has asked for, and that DHS needs, and HHS, the two agencies that are involved in this, money that they need to, you know, to manage the surging arrivals. So there's going to be a negotiation about, you know, how much money is Congress going to provide to manage this crisis, and then also what conditions are they going to attach to it. And the conditions, you know, what the Republicans and the House have signaled is that the conditions are going to include some kind of changes to the existing processing. There's a lot of things that you can do, you know, including a lot of things that stop short of what Cornyn and Quayer have proposed that would speed up the processing. You know, and the goal is, you know, I agree with Jonathan that, you know, we need to have fair processing and we need to do everything we can to identify the kids mm-hmm. that have a humanitarian claim. But there's also a recognition okay. that the kids that don't have a legitimate claim need to get sent back to break this cycle.
Okay, we're going to talk about that when we come back. We invite phone calls. Number is 210-614-8980. What to do about the children coming up from Central America. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We invite your phone calls. The number is 210-614-8980 as we talk about what to do with the children who are coming up from Central America. 210-614-8980. Should they be granted some sort of immigration refugee status, or should the United States figure out a way to grease the skis and hurry up and get them deported? We want to hear your thoughts and comments. 210-614-8980. So, Jonathan Ryan over at RAIS is you're a nonprofit group that provides legal help to the children immigrants. What about this refugee status? What is that? What does that entail?
So currently, an individual has to prove that they qualify as a refugee before an immigration judge if they're in this immigration court system.
And how do they do that?
So they present an application, which then must lead to a full hearing where they present testimony. The documentary evidence is reviewed, is disputed if necessary by the opposing counsel for the Immigration Service. The child answers questions from the judge, from the trial attorney that ICE there has there.
Well, what are they asking?
So they want to know if the child has suffered an individualized harm or a threat of harm or if they are, or if there are people in their families or in groups similarly situated to them who have suffered these harms or threats, or if they have not past persecution, a credible fear of some future persecution that they may suffer.
Well, how do we know these kids are telling the truth?
It is a very tough gauntlet. It's a crucible, the immigration court system. There is no kinder, gentler court system for children. The children are up against the same highly motivated, highly trained government prosecutor, and they're sitting before a very scrupulous judge who is weighing the evidence carefully. So the children must testify credibly. They are subject to cross-examination. They must provide documents. They must provide sometimes journal or news articles from their home country to support or corroborate the stories that they provide. The children, just like any other respondent, go through no less than 4 or 5 sworn statements throughout the time that they're in custody. Those are all weighed and evaluated against each other to see if they're consistent, or if not, that could affect the child's credibility, in which case the judge or trial attorney may believe nothing that they say. So it is a legal process. It is a very carefully measured process that does take time and resources.
Yeah, but time and resources is things that apparently we don't have, or we're starting to see a shortening of those things because of this proposed legislation in Washington, D.C.
Well, I think that that's, you know, the crisis can be discussed in different levels. There are many children who are in detention, but keep in mind these children are very quickly being reunified with sponsors and family members around the country. The government has just upgraded the numbers of children projected to come to this country to approximately 90,000. If we take 100,000 to make the math easy, we can say 90-95% of these kids, or 90-95,000 children, will reunify to sponsors. It'll be the burden of those sponsors to pay for their room and board and feed them and clothe them. About 5,000, let's say, children may end up in the government's shelter system long-term because they have nobody. First, these are the children that are most likely to be refugees who are fleeing some extreme violence situations. They have nobody, no support. Well, 5,000 children in the custody of the federal government, I would remind us that the state of Texas alone received 10,000 refugees just last year. On average, we received between 9 and 11,000 refugees each
year. So you're saying it's not a huge burden. It's not a burden.
This is the most wealthy, powerful nation in the history of the earth. We have a commitment. You know, we make a report card every year. We grade every other nation on its human rights record, on its treatment of children and refugees. That says a lot about ourselves, that we are going to judge other nations. There are 2 million refugees have come from Syria. Do you know how many have come to the United States? 200. We are not the most participant in the refugee management system of the earth. That is mainly the burden borne by countries in Africa, Asia, and Europe. We do not accept as many refugees, one could argue, as we should.
Okay, we're going to go to the phones. The number is 210-614-8980. If you want to join the conversation, 614-8980. Susan has called in. Susan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Now, what is the percentage of children that are running to a parent already here in the United States?
Okay, Susan, thank you for your phone call. Mark Rosenblum over at the U.S. Immigration Policy Institute, tell me, can you answer that?
Well, we know that about 85% of kids are who pass through OIR custody are being reunited either with a parent or a close family member. So, you know, the vast majority of the kids who are coming to the U.S. have families here.
I might dispute that somewhat. When we talk about a relative, the children, and we've spoken with thousands of these children, when you say that they're returning with a relative, oftentimes these are very tenuous, distant family relationships. It might be the stepmother of my cousin. That involves many birth certificates and marriage certificates to actually prove that family relationship. Oftentimes, and what we are seeing is children are reunifying to a distant family relative whom they have never met and who they did not know that they were coming to reunite with. This is a child who fled a violent situation with very few plans in place. And along the way, they make a plan.
Well, we hear about kids coming up with a scrap of paper with a phone number on it or a phone number written on the inside of their belt. You know, that's the number to call when they get to the Border Patrol, and that's going to get them to someone to reunite with.
Well, many people immigrate to the United States. Many people around the world have a family relative who is in the United States. This cannot be used to deduce that the reason the children are coming is to travel from that home country and then reunite with this family member. I mean, we have seen the asylum request rates in the countries around the region, in Guatemala, in Costa Rica, in Belize. They are up 700% in the last four years. So this is not a regional issue, nor is it just an immigration issue of children leaving those countries and coming to this country. They are spreading around the entire region because there is a veritable war.
Right, and we're not seeing large numbers coming from Nicaragua or Costa Rica, these other countries in Central America.
This is a very focused, concentrated flight of children from the very specific region where drugs are shipped from South America to the United States, where they are consumed by us.
Okay, let's get to Krista on the line. Krista has called in. Hi, Krista. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. My comment is, and kind of question is, why can't the community help, the churches and so forth, help with these kids? I mean, we have money to do this.
All right, Krista, thank you for your phone call. Appreciate that. So, Mark, have you seen an outpour of faith-based nonprofits, charities taking part here?
You definitely do see, the Catholic Church is real involved, and there's the Lutheran Immigrant Refugee Service is real involved. They work with the Office of Refugee Resettlement and the Department of Health and Human Services to provide services to the kids. We're also seeing a lot of organizations like Jonathan step up to provide, you know, pro bono legal counsel that these kids need. I think that organizations like that are stepping up and providing services. I mean, these numbers have increased pretty quickly, and so I think that there's still some shortfall. And then, you know, in terms of what's happening in D.C., there are services that the federal government has to provide under U.S. law, and that before the faith-based groups and the other nonprofits step into the process. So even though NGOs are doing a lot, you know, there's still a lot that the federal government is going to be required to do.
Right. And Jonathan, aren't there like some of these groups, the Catholic Church, sometimes will be reimbursed by the government, or they'll be contracted by the government to provide these services?
They can be, but there's no assurance right now. I know during, for example, Katrina, a lot of agencies stepped forward under the hope that they would get reimbursed, and that didn't necessarily happen. So that is still there are many agencies, including mine, who have pending requests to the federal government for funding to do these services, but there's been no word yet.
Okay, Edith has called in. Let's get her on the air. Edith, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. I just have one thing to say. I'm not a big church lady, but I remember Jesus saying, "Let the children come to me." This is supposed to be a faith-based administration on both sides. We're a big, super-rich country. We're the richest in the world with all the natural resources. So I say, let the children in. And the people in Southern California are to be ashamed of themselves. Bring the children in. They're part of the America, same as we are. They just threw the short straw.
All right, Edith, thank you for your call. We appreciate your comments. So, Mark, are you hearing a lot of people like Edith, people saying we do have a responsibility to these children?
I mean, I actually think we certainly hear that. I'm actually surprised at how unsympathetic a lot of Americans are and how little sort of allowance there seems to be for the fact that so many of the people arriving are kids and they're arriving on their own. And just to sort of echo a point that Jonathan made, when you look at some of the other refugee crises around the world, many smaller countries take in many more refugees than the United States does. I do think that because of the broader politics of the immigration debate and because the United States is emerging from the Great Recession, I think that you've seen, at least in some quarters, a pretty hard-hearted response.
So Jonathan, let me ask you, though, what would happen, if all the kids get deported, they get sent back to their home countries, how would that impact, come back to the United States later?
Right, right. Well, we're hearing two different, very different messages from the administration right now. On one hand, they seem to agree that these children are fleeing violence and crime from drug cartels and their countries. But on the other hand, the administration appears to be saying, round these kids up and ship them home. It is very difficult to reconcile those two statements. If these children are just sent back to these countries, to what social service agencies are they handed over? To whom are these children going to be entrusted? I think that it's unfortunately obvious and clear that if these children are pretermitted from asking for help, that they will be sent back. And we will hear stories over the coming years from journalists like yourselves who travel down there, and that The children who came to this country looking for help will be found dead in that country, killed many times by the very people that they were fleeing from.
Okay, another quick call from David. David, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'd just like to say I think we have a responsibility to these kids as well, and I don't think we should just be deciding to fast-track them out of here to an uncertain reception, as your guest just mentioned. We should hear every one of them's full story and evaluate them for whatever it's worth. We don't want to just send them back in a hurry to a possible gang reception or killing or whatever kind of a thing it is. And I'm really surprised that the Democrats, who really helped President Obama get reelected and have been pushing for immigration reform for so long, seem to be in agreement with this in Congress. It really floors me.
Okay, David, thank you for that. So, Mark, are the Democrats falling in line with this, with Henry Cuellar? He's a Democrat.
I mean, I think that Congressman Cuellar is a little on his own among the Democrats. You've definitely seen the Hispanic Caucus and the Progressive Caucus and some of the other Democratic members pushing back a little bit. But, I mean, I do want to I think that the reason you're seeing those mixed messages from the administration is that this is a mixed flow. You know, many of the kids, we estimate around 40% to 60% probably have a valid humanitarian claim and are fleeing conditions that would entitle them to a visa to stay in the U.S.
Rice,
Okay, go ahead, real quick, Jonathan.
At Rice's, we've interviewed over 1,000 children. We've identified well over 60% eligible for relief under the laws of today.
Okay, and we'll see how the laws change as this works its way through Washington, D.C. We're out of time. I want to thank Mark Rosenblum, Deputy Director of U.S. Immigration Policy Program at the Migration Policy Institute, Jonathan Ryan, Executive Director of RAISIS, a San Antonio nonprofit that's helping the children, migrants, and their families. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be back after this NPR news break.